Now, in studio, your lending expert, family man, and servant leader, who's committed to honoring and empowering San Diego's servant leaders to rise up. Your host of Rise Up Radio, James Carmody.
Happy holidays, folks. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy holidays. You are listening to Rise Up Radio. Thank you for being here. We hope you are buckled up. We have two great servant leaders with us in studio, and we hope you are enjoying this holiday season. We know that there's a lot of holiday parties. We know we got the parade of lights going on in the harbor. We're encouraging people to be safe when they're going to these holiday parties, to not drink and drive. We now live in the age of Uber and Lyft and all that stuff. If not, hail a cap. But the bottom line is, we hope you're enjoying this holiday season. And most importantly, you're taking time to reflect on how your 2017 was for yourself and your families and your coworkers and your teams and your businesses. And you're just pushing pause for a second and slowing down and really enjoying this time. One thing I know for me is it can be go, 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 go. You know, the calendar, there's just such a demand on the calendar, and it's important to say, you know what, maybe I'm not going to do that, or I'm not going to stay out that late or what have you, but I'm going to spend some time with my family and not necessarily have an agenda and not have somewhere to go or somewhere to get to, but be present in the moment with my loved ones and acknowledge them for all the love and support that they've poured into me and my family. And I encourage you to take that on. If you're listening to this show, you know, you're a supporter of Rise Up Radio, and we love you for that. And we just, you know, we want to remind you to slow it down and pause for a second and enjoy this special time with family. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce our first guest. Speaking of servant leaders, this man is clearly a servant leader, retired U.S. Navy SEAL, motivational speaker, and author who is shooting for the moon and playing a big game. We're going to unpack this. Mr. Floyd McClendon Jr., welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me, James. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for serving our great country. We are very clear here at Rise Up Radio that our freedom is not free. And we thank you for the time and your dedication to this great nation.
Oh, absolutely. It was my pleasure.
So we know now, I see this, you know, this handsome, well put together man in a suit and tie, and he's got his American flag pin on, and he is well put together. But we know that we didn't start out like this.
Absolutely right? Not.
So I understand you're actually originally from Chicago.
Yes, born and raised.
Born and raised.
Born
okay.
And raised. So it's been 25 years in the United States Navy. Okay. I am officially a civilian as of September 30th. I'm really excited about my next chapter and about continuing to serve because you know that's what I think that it's about.
I agree. I think we have a responsibility to serve, and you know, we all get introduced to service in a number of different ways, right? So, you know, one of the questions that always weighs on my mind is I get the privilege to have conversations with our country soldiers. When did you first say, hey, you know what, I might want to get in the military? You know, maybe the Navy's for me.
It was an accident.
Okay. All right.
Honestly, I was a year and a half into college, and
okay,
I was failing.
And were you going to school in college in Chicago?
I was going to University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana.
Yep.
And I specifically went to college just to get away from home.
I understand.
And I was wasting my parents' money.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, wasting my time. So I decided to go into the Naval Reserves at first. And then I went to boot camp, did the Naval Reserves for a year, came back to college and realized, no, it's still not for me.
Okay.
So I didn't want to stay at home. Inner city Chicago was just not the place to be hanging around. For a young man,
mm-hmm,
that did not have a higher education. So I chose the Navy, you know, as a platform to experience some different things. And okay, I didn't think that it was going to be a career. I just said I was going to do 6 years and I was going to be out.
Do my time, get some education,
do my
serve
time,
my country.
And at the time it had nothing to do with service. You know, it was all being selfish and just trying to do something for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So the service part came throughout the process when I decided to take the military seriously, when I decided to make it a career. And then
that, and when did that start? Because I know, you know, you get into the Navy and, you know, you're green, right? And you're like, I'm just trying to sort this stuff out. I got a whole new culture and set of rules being thrown at me, and I'm just trying to keep my head above water.
Yes.
What was that? You know, what point were you like, all right, I'm kind of getting the hang of this, and there's more to this than rules?
The shift for me was 6 years.
Okay.
About 5-6 years out, because I signed up for 6 years. I was trying to get away from school. I ended up picking a profession, electronic technician, that sent me back to school for 2 years.
Sure.
So right. I was really excited about that. Not really. So about 5-6 years, I said, maybe I can consider this a career. But I didn't like what I was doing as an electronic technician. It just didn't resonate with me.
Mm.
So a coworker of mine decided to train to be a U.S. Navy SEAL, and I didn't know how to swim. So I said, hey, I want to learn how to swim. Can I train with you just to learn how to swim?
Wow. And yes. How old are you at this point?
I am about 23.
Okay.
About 23, 24. Right.
Yep.
And I'm in the Navy. I don't know how to swim. So that was
I get it. A little bit of an oxymoron there.
Troubling for me.
Right.
So I started training with my coworker. He didn't medically meet the standards. What I found through the training process was that I was not as physically adept as I thought I was.
Sometimes there's a gap there for ourselves.
Yes.
You know, we believe or see one thing, and then that's not always the case.
Yes. So the training really smacked me upside my head and said,
hey, reality check.
Yeah, you're not who you think you are. And I started to really thrive off of that feeling, because I wanted to improve and get better.
Yeah.
And then I started to realize this could be my way, the profession, you know, to continue my naval career. And I was, you know, long story short, I was blessed. It was a long road. It took almost 6 years from the time I said that I wanted to be a Navy SEAL to the time that I actually became a Navy SEAL.
How long was that process for you from when you said, all right, I think I can do this, to actually when you got accepted to actually go to BUDS?
It was about 9 months.
Okay.
6 months into my training, from not swimming to taking the physical screening test, barely passed the swim.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this, I mean, this is a fit guy, and he is saying, I didn't know how to swim. I'm in the Navy somehow. I'm 23 years old, but I think I want to be a SEAL, but I know I need to swim a little bit. And in 9 months, got adept enough skills where you could get into BUDS.
But I wasn't ready for BUDS.
Sure.
I wasn't ready for BUDS.
I don't think anybody is if you
right.
ask them.
So I took the test. 6 months I passed. About 3 months later, they said, hey, we've accepted you. But my command will let me go. I had to wait another year. Thank goodness. Because I needed it. So I trained for a year more, went to BUDS. And I would say about 7-8 months into it, I quit.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I had some medical issues going on. The training didn't deem it serious enough to pull me to let me get well. You know, I made a executive decision to say, hey, I need to fix myself. So I pulled myself out of training and went away for 15 months, came back and made it through.
Good for you. I'm glad you did.
I'm glad I did as well, because I would have permanently damaged myself had I stayed.
Got it. Got it. Well, this country's better off for it. So you come back, get a second look, you complete it, you know, you meet all the measures to become a SEAL. Then what?
This is where the service part starts to come in with something greater than yourself. Even when I was training to be a Navy SEAL, it was about me becoming a Navy SEAL. But my brothers, once I got to my first SEAL team and I started training for real world, the brothers next to me who'd already been downrange and done really good work, they started to reel me in and started to really teach me what service was about. You know, it was greater than self. And that just continued to grow and grow over my 15-year Navy SEAL career.
And so through that, you know, you're now kind of having this awakening, if you will, with your fellow men, and they, you know, and you're getting a feel for what service is like. And then you went on and you served 25 years, Yes. What did that capacity look like for yourself as an officer?
Officer had no, I really had no desire. I was chief petty officer, so enlisted. We work for a living.
Sure, you know, working man.
All officers, we tend to joke with them, and they sit in the office and tell us what to do, but we put in the hard work. But the service part, when it came to, I found myself getting up every day a lot quicker with a clearer mindset, with the more aggressive approach to life, because it was a purpose, you know, and it had nothing to do with, it wasn't self-fueled. And the more I did that, the more, I guess, success, and also the more I was happy.
Yeah.
Right? And then also the responsibility as far as keeping yourself physically, mentally, emotionally, financially, spiritually in tune. Mm-hmm. At a very high level, so that way when you go to work, you can focus on work because lives are on the line. You know, your brothers, your teammates, the men and women that you serve with overseas. You know, that was, you know, clear cut. Like, the first most important thing was putting myself in a position to optimally perform. Mm-hmm. So that way there was no room for someone to say he fell short, or, you know, he wasn't as successful as he should have been in order to get things done. And it was life or death. And, you know, that really resonated and was very serious to me. So I just take that, and it's representing your family as well.
Of course, your name.
You know, and you want to come home. You want to leave a legacy behind in case, you know, something happened, and being okay with that. So service was, it came late in my career. It mm-hmm. came late in life. But now I'm making up for it.
Now you are making up for it with flying colors, you know? So, wow. First of all, thank you for who you are and what you're doing for our country. And I'm so glad that you discovered service and serving others. And I'm so excited to dig into what you've been up to since you've got out of the Navy and what you have in store for the future. So we're going to take a short break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Rise Up Radio. You're following us at sdriseup.com. Stick around. We'll be back in a few.
AM 1170, The Answer.
Hey folks, James Carmody, Synergy One Lending. Are you in the market to buy a property and need to close really fast? Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team is your family-owned mortgage bank. Right now, there's low inventory, there's a lot of offers, it's competitive. Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team can close your loan in as little as 10 days. Call today to find out more. 858-525-3086. Call James Carmody and the Carmody team at Synergy One Lending, 858-525-3086.
Jared Kelly here. Here's the deal. San Diego's expensive. San Diego's a tough place to own and buy a house, but I want to tell you something special about San Diego. The housing market has appreciated consistently over the years, and if you're not a part of that, I want you to ask the question why. I would love to sit down and understand that process with you and help you make a plan so that your family fits your home and you're not strapped by the things that you think are constraining you in San Diego. Visit missionrealtygroup.com, hit the contact tab, and let's have a conversation today.
Hey folks, James Carmody and Jared Kelly, the hosts of Rise Up Radio, your source for good news in the San Diego community. We are sharing the good news about what's going on. We need your help. If you are listening to us, please stop what you're doing. Go to sdriseup.com. In the bottom right corner of the page, there's a button that says, I will rise up. We need your help in sharing the good news in San Diego's community. Whether it's the local pastor of your church, your kid's little league coach, or small business owner, we want to share the good news. So go to sdriseup.com and share the stories.
AM 1170, The Answer, San Diego.
Welcome back, folks. You are listening to Rise Up Radio. I am your host, James Carmody. You are following us online at sdriseup.com. In studio with us is retired U.S. Navy SEAL, motivational speaker, and author, Floyd McClendon Jr. Sir, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. So, folks, in the first segment, we were talking about Floyd's journey as a young man in Chicago and starting in the Navy Reserves, and then his transition and little fun fact, not learning how to swim until the age of 23, but he's already been in the Navy for several years. And then he says, I think I'm going to be a SEAL. Goes through that path and that journey, that progression, and, you know, becomes a Navy SEAL, falls in love with the idea of service. And one nugget from the first segment that I think is just so powerful is that service is not about self. Service is about others. And Floyd is living that. And right now we're actually going to unpack what has it been like transitioning out of the Navy, and what has it been like for you as a leader in the civilian space? And so one of the first things I know that you're involved with the Honor Foundation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Honor Foundation was very critical in my transitional success. Mm. It's a nonprofit organization.
Okay.
That it's Career Transition Institute, exactly is what it is. It provides executive education. It provides one-on-one coaching. I needed two when I went through the program.
Sometimes we need an extra helping.
It also provides exclusive professional network.
Okay.
And what it does is it builds a bridge between the special operations community and what we can provide for the private sector, because oftentimes we are underutilized because the private sector doesn't know who we are. Well, they know who we are, but they don't know exactly our skills and how we could bring it to the table to help them.
Agree with that.
And the Honor Foundation was very instrumental in doing that. I did it last year in August for Group 9. Group 15 is about to start in February.
Okay.
So if you're a U.S. Navy SEAL, if you're a Marine Raider, if you're a Army Green Beret, or you're just in the spec operations community, you can apply to go to this program.
Wow.
And I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it.
Okay. And all right. So, and then is there anything necessarily to be admitted? Is there anything else that people need to be aware of?
Absolutely. There's a screening process. So you go to www.honor.org, and they tell you exactly what you need to do in order to apply. You know, it, part of it requires a resume, part of it requires a couple phone interviews. Mm-hmm. So it's not just you don't just say, hey, I want to apply and get accepted. You have to be a viable candidate in order for them to introduce you to their network. So it's and it's an eye opener too, because being in the military for so long, you have everything in place. Now you're about to separate and you're completely rebuilding yourself. So yep. That could be a challenge. For me, it was a challenge because I'm building new relationships.
Sure.
Right? And I'm severing, you know, old relationships. But I found it to be very, you know, exhilarating, because it's a new chapter in my life and I'm ready for it.
It's fantastic. And I know, I mean, one of the things that you've been taking on is actually becoming an author. I know you've been penning a book, you know, Hard Earned Lessons. Tell us about that.
Hard Earned Lessons is about a young African-American teenage boy up until the stages of the introduction to his first SEAL teams, a few of the lessons that he learned throughout the process. Mm. It is exactly what it is. And I wanted to share with you and listeners and viewers out there that we're the same.
Yes, we are.
I've went through the same trials and tribulations of you, the same heartbreaks, and these are some of the methods that I've used in order to be successful in my previous career that I'm going to use to be successful in my future career. And you can use them as well. Mm. So it's interchangeable. I didn't do anything. I don't think I did anything special or anything different than what you can do in your profession, in your career to be successful.
How do people get a copy of the book?
It's going to be on Amazon.
I like it.
Next week.
Okay, great.
Just in time for Christmas. I'm doing the final proof. So hopefully by the end of the day, I will have contacted Amazon and said, hey, look, we're good to go. And then they'll put it on there. And then they'll put it on their website. And you can go out and learn a little bit about about my hard-earned lessons. And it's also in conjunction with 22 other authors from, I'm a professional member of the National Speakers Association.
Okay.
So we all got together, collaborated to share something personal about ourselves that we feel that people can take away and enjoy and maybe grow. This is the book is the hard-earned lessons.
I love it. So, yeah. Folks, you're going to want to get a copy of this. Well, obviously, we'll be sharing it on social media on how you can get it. Obviously, it'll end up going through Amazon as well. But Hard-Earned Lessons by Floyd McClendon Jr., that's the book that you want to check out. Now, Navy SEAL, speaker, author, what is next? And what is your vision? What is your plan? Because I know you are playing a big game in this world.
Absolutely. So the vision and plan is continue to serve.
Okay.
It's for me, it's just a natural progression. I feel those in the military, especially who have gone eight years to all the way to doing a 20, 30 year career. We have a lot to offer to our country when it comes to leadership, when it comes to teamwork, when it comes to collaboration. So for me, it's about continuing to serve for the unification of America. Mm. And that's exactly what it is. Now, what does that look like? I'm positioning myself to run for Congress in 2020.
You heard that, folks. We got a 2020 run coming at us.
Absolutely. Just the need for civility in government and social media and everyday life with each other, the need for sensible productivity. And the difference right now is we need to overcome and unify the effects of the change in communication feeds that are out there, right? Because we have all these negative things that we're constantly bombarded with. And it's not that it's never happened before. It's always been out there. It's just that now we're exposed to it every day, and we need to adjust and just come together as a people, put aside the politics, and have a commitment for serving each other and serving our country. Because if you look at the world, if you look at the issues with North Korea, if you look at the human rights issues that are going on outside of America, if you just look at the natural disasters that we're experiencing, Puerto Rico, Texas, Louisiana, the wildfires in California, all of this argument that we're doing, social media, TV, online, it pales in comparison. And that's what we need to focus on. So my new mission is unification of America.
Unification of America. I love that, and I couldn't agree more. I think, unfortunately, I think that we're continuing to divide one another. I think we're very quick to say, I am this way, they are that way. Insert topic. And we exploit it through social media, and all of this information is readily available through our phones and at our fingertips. And so we're very quick to distribute and disseminate our point of view in our information. And I'm not necessarily saying right or wrong, but a lot of the communication is divisive, not inclusive, and it's not unifying us as a people. Now, you're originally from Chicago. I'm originally from Boston. We both live in San Diego. Now, people all have their differences, but I think the power and the magic is when people with differences of opinions and backgrounds and beliefs can come together and say, okay, well, why do you support that point of view? And why do you support that? And this is why I support this, and have a healthy debate and argument and continue to move the ball forward and together as a people.
I absolutely agree. And I think military veterans do it best, because that's what we do day in and day out. Different backgrounds, different nationalities, different experiences. And some people may look at that as a crutch. I look at that as an asset.
Completely. I think diversity is a huge strength.
Yes. Because I will never be able to think the way you think. And if you can bring something new to the table to help solve a problem, that is awesome. It prevents groupthink. We just need to rise above and be respectful and have dignity, you know, for each other. And that's the mission. That's the goal. I don't care who you are, color. I don't care what your sexual preference is. I don't care what party you with. If you want to work towards making America better and unifying us, power perceived is power achieved.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And power and perceived is power achieved.
If you believe that we have the power as one another to come together, then that power would be achieved and we will be successful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I can't think of a better person to carry the flag for us and a run in 2020. I think that a lot of us as Americans are sick and tired of the way DC and politics have been, regardless of party. I think we're just tired as a people.
Yes.
And I think we need to bring love back into the conversation and unify this country.
That should be number one.
You know,
or number two. Well, number one is your purpose. Number yep. two is your love. You can't go anywhere without you struck the nose on the
where
nail
where
on the head.
Now where would you run?
Where would I run? Well, currently I just relocated to the Austin, Texas area. So
okay.
So that's where I'm going to start. That's where I'm going to start.
Okay. Okay. Good.
But I'm not painting myself in a box.
No, that's it.
Painting myself in a box.
That's it. You know, folks, you are going to want to check out and catch up with Floyd McClendon Jr. I think one of the best places you can go is go on LinkedIn, and you know Floyd's LinkedIn is /FMCLENDONJR. That's F McClendon Jr. And check him out and connect with Floyd. Get up to what he's involved in and what he's creating for unifying America. Last parting words for our listeners here, Floyd.
I am just honored to be in the position that I am right now. I thank you for giving me this voice, 1170 AM. And it, I'm not on an island. You know, I have advisors, I have coaches, I have spouse,
yes,
kids. So I may be the voice, I may be the face, you know, but it's definitely a unification of America team, that's pushing this. So thank you. I'm just grateful for the opportunity.
You're welcome. So, folks, we've had the pleasure of having Floyd McClendon, retired U.S. Navy SEAL, motivational speaker, author, and future congressman, unifying America, bringing us back together.
We can go a little bit higher.
That's right. Folks, you've been listening to Rise Up Radio. You're following us at striseup.com. We'll take a short break. Stick around. We'll be back in a few.
AM 1170, The Answer.
Jared Kelly here, co-host of Rise Up Radio and the Rise Up Movement. We are having an amazing journey and just trying to hold on to this movement, but we need you to be a part of this. If you would like to sponsor what's happening on air and in the community with the Rise Up Movement, visit us at sdriseup.com. Let's rise up together and understand it is our job to maintain America's finest city. Visit us at sdriseup.com. That's sdriseup.com. Jared Kelly here, founder of Mission Realty Group. As you have heard me say thousands of times, we must be part of the community that we live in. I've had the privilege of using our company to do just that. It is our goal to not only help people make informed and excellent decisions when buying and selling a home, but to really understand your goals and needs. Yes, for some people, their house is just a roof to live under. But for others, it is a home where you are raising a family, entertaining friends, and a place to get away from the hustle of life. Let me ask you this. Is your home right for your family? When is the last time you even thought about this? Let us use our exclusive process to help you understand where the market is going. And if you're thinking about buying or selling a home, let's have a conversation today. Visit missionrealtygroup.com, hit the contact tab, and we would love to connect with you and make a plan. Again, that's missionrealtygroup.com. That's missionrealtygroup.com. Hit the contact tab and let's make a plan so you can win.
AM 1170, The Answer.
Welcome back, folks. You are listening to Rise Up Radio. I am your host, James Carmody. You are following us at sdriseup.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have another amazing servant leader in store for you today. It's Deborah Dixon. Deborah Dixon is from Dixon and Diab and Chambers, which is a well-known attorney here in San Diego, and has joined some local firms as part of California Fire Lawyers. And we're going to unpack this, but it's such an important topic for us to share and get educated on. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. Before we, you know, dig into the wildfires and you know, your practice and everything that's going on, let's back up a little bit, you know, and just want to hear a little bit about your story. You know, how did you actually get to where you are today? Where did you grow up? Where'd you go to school?
Well, I will break those down one by one.
Okay.
Let's see. I got here today from various fortunate events in my life, being able to practice in San Diego as a lawyer. I grew up in Northern California, East Bay, California,
okay.
And then went to Santa Barbara for college, and then California Western School of Law for law school.
Good school.
Yeah, it is great school. I was very, very pleased with my education there. I expected to go back to Northern California, but once I got into the San Diego community, I just couldn't leave. There's so many great people here, as you well know, and it's a great legal community. I started off working at a local law firm doing a lot of business litigation and some employment litigation and helping people in different areas, but focusing a lot on business. And then recently I moved over to Gomez Trial Attorneys, where I was a senior trial attorney, focusing on class actions and people who were injured by a major event. So we did fire litigation, mass torts, so people who are injured by a product or a medication, and then class actions relating to products that went defective or hurt people. And from there, I transitioned over to opening up my own firm, Dixon, Diab & Chambers, as you mentioned, and we immediately got connected with law firms that have been working on the fire cases with us in the past and started working on the Northern California fires together as California Fire Lawyers. And it's been a great experience for me. It's tragedy, but you do your best that you can help people in that instance.
Well, thank you for doing that. You know, and I want to continue to unpack that because it's, you know, it's such a timely topic. And
unfortunately,
it's impacting hundreds of thousands of people. And we're feeling the effects of that in Northern California and Central California and Southern California through these different fires. So let's back up a little bit and let's start with Northern California. You know, what was your experience like? You know, what is your perspective on that?
I have to say that I felt like I was as close to war as I ever would be and hopefully ever will be. Hmm. When I went up and saw the devastation in Northern California, we were there very quickly after the fires and had been somewhat contained. There were still hot spots, a lot of smoke. I had never seen just flattened communities. All you saw was burnt out cars. Maybe there was a chimney left over, but it was just rubble for miles. And that was really impactful to me, but also devastating for that community. You see firsthand how the devastation of wildfires affects people. And right away we realized if we're going to be able to help people, you know, lawyers, we have a certain amount of skills that we can provide to people. Some would say compassion is not the first one, but I think that I've been surrounded by a bunch of lawyers who are very compassionate and very giving. And I think that that's important, that we use that skill to be able to help people right away. And so we started with what are the needs of those people in that community right after the fire devastation. They just lost everything. Where are they going? There's not enough hotels. There was already a housing shortage in Sonoma County and Napa County, Santa Rosa particularly, that got hit very hard. What can we do to actually help these people right now? So we started with dinners, food, providing gift cards to people so that they can just buy the basic necessities because everything they had burned. We have met with a lot of people who lived in mobile home facilities, who were in elderly home care facilities, and those really were devastated because they had nothing left and not that much to rebuild. So we started with just some basic outreach, giving people information on what you might be able to do to contact FEMA for emergency care, but really just also providing what we could with hosting some dinners with a local baseball team that's up there, the junior college. There was a church that became an ad hoc refugee place.
Just bringing community together.
Bringing the community together and passing out gift cards. And it's really rewarding to do that for people and then to be able to talk with people and hear their stories. And then the second part of that is educating people. Mm-hmm. It's very overwhelming in the beginning, and it's obvious that people are just trying to make ends and figure out.
In shock, exactly.
And just finding housing, finding where am I going to wake up tomorrow morning? Do I have a toothbrush? Things like that. But then the second step is starting to figure out, okay, how do I even begin to move forward from this process? And so we hosted a lot of meetings just to provide information about things that people may not be aware of, such as FEMA or emergency housing or federal government that may provide some services. And then also provide information about how to navigate insurance. A lot of people have insurance, some people don't. And that's a very difficult area for people, even lawyers. They're not trained in their own insurance policies.
Let's unpack that a little bit. Like, you know, from the standpoint of, okay, you're the homeowner, you've lost your home, you've lost all your belongings. Horrific incident that you wouldn't imagine for anyone. What does that process look like for them? Like, when they go to FEMA and they start these things, like, what are the actual steps and what is the communication like?
It's unfortunately, because of all of the natural disasters that we've been hit with in the United States, Hurricane Harvey and the Florida hurricane, FEMA was somewhat stretched on their own resources. We didn't see what we've seen in other wildfires where there was immediate housing being provided to temporary housing to the people. And that's purely because we were the third of a major natural disaster in a very short period of time. And so FEMA wasn't able to be there right away to provide temporary housing or to set up camps and things like that. But the first step that we always tell people is, if you have insurance, contact your insurance adjuster or your insurance company right away to let them know that you've been affected. Those insurance companies, just like FEMA, were also tapped. They had sent everybody to Houston and then to Florida, and then they had to send people to Northern California. So we were seeing insurance adjusters from Minnesota coming into California because all the California adjusters were in Texas and vice versa.
Right, but step one, contact your insurance company.
Contact your insurance company. Right away, we also have people contact FEMA if they are eligible for FEMA services, such as they owned a home or they need temporary housing. There are some issues that we always advise people with immigration status. It is a federal government agency. They'll make you provide status papers and things like that. But contact FEMA. Even if you're in the long line and FEMA's not able to help you right away, you will get there. They will be able to provide you some sort of temporary relief if it's possible. And then the third step is look for some sort of temporary housing just to get yourself situated, to have some sort of normalcy again, because that's so important in the rebuilding process for these people who have been devastated. They may have kids, they may have pets, they may be by themselves. Find somewhere you can live so you're not sleeping on someone's couch or in a hotel or, you know, a friend of a friend of a friend has a futon that you're on. That just makes it every day a reminder of what you've lost. So those are the three main issues that we talk to people about after the fires, and then really going through the process of working with your insurance company, if you have insurance, to make lists of what you've lost. And that's very hard for people to do, but it's really important. People have lost so much, and it's hard for you to say, count all of the things that you lost in your house. I mean, it's just impossible.
Right.
But we help people with that process, including, you know, something like, it used to be fun when you were going to have a registry for a baby shower or for a wedding or whatever. People would go to stores and make registries for themselves. Mm-hmm. We've advised our clients and people we've talked to, make those registries for your insurance company. That's the best way for the insurance company to know how to pay you back for what you've lost. Go and see what you would have had to replace by clicking in your, you know, Target.com or Bed Bath & Beyond, whatever it is, and just make a registry of all the things that you've lost.
Right. Basically account for all of your personal belongings and effects so that you have those and can navigate, in a more smoother, faster way with the insurance company.
Exactly.
And what about now? Okay. So we're getting through that process. And then what if there's wrongdoing?
Exactly. You know, in these cases in Northern California specifically, and now we're seeing it in Southern California, a lot of these fires are caused, unfortunately, by power lines. Power lines are going down. And we knew in Northern California, we have the 911 calls and we have a map that shows where all the fire sparked based on the 911 calls of people saying, there's a pole down, there's a transformer that's blown. And they're walking past these electrical lines that are down and they're sparking. And, you know, we all pay for electricity. We all have a common need for electricity. But when the electrical lines are actually causing fires that are devastating our community, it is something that we do evaluate, is who should be responsible for that. It's clearly not the homeowners or the renters or the people who've lost everything who are responsible for it. So we start looking at the cause of the fires. And in California, if the electrical companies have lines that have caused the fires, the electrical companies can be held responsible, even if they weren't per se negligent, where, you know, they just, you know, let the fire lines go too long or something like that. But we are seeing in this case in Northern California that the trees were falling on the lines and they were pushing the lines and they weren't being maintained. And so we do definitely evaluate, can we do anything to help those people who've been devastated by the fires?
Got it. So obviously, you know, we've got climate that it starts with. We've got high heat, low humidity. We've got wind. And then we've got these power lines that may or may not have been tended to.
Exactly.
And it's almost like adding an accelerator.
Exactly. And unfortunately, the climate is a major factor, that it's hot and it's very dry. But these power lines are supposed to withstand wind in hurricane weather, and they're not being able to. And when they go down, it's dry, as you said, and they spark.
Sure. And then you have a transformer that blows up in a, you know, a dry pile of brush or grass or what have you.
Exactly.
It's like kindling.
It's exactly kindling, and then it just goes. And these firefighters are doing the best they can to stop it and to prevent it. But with winds and the amount of fuel, it's devastating.
Wow. Wow. Well, thank you for what you're doing. You know, folks, we're in studio with Deborah Dixon, and Deborah Dixon is an attorney, and she owns Dixon, Diab & Chambers. They're, you know, very well-known law firm here in San Diego, and they've partnered up with other local firms as part of the California Fire Lawyers, and they're doing a fantastic job helping citizens and homeowners navigate these wildfires. And what does it look like once you've lost everything? How do you get your life back together, get some sort of routine again, and start to rebuild? So we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Rise Up Radio. Follow us at sdriseup.com. We'll be right back.
AM 1170, The Answer, San Diego.
Hey folks, James Carmody, Synergy One Lending. Are you in the market to buy a property and need to close really fast? Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team is your family-owned mortgage bank. Right now, there's low inventory, there's a lot of offers, it's competitive. Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team can close your loan in as little as 10 days. Call today to find out more. 858-525-3086. Call James Carmody and the Carmody team at Synergy One Lending, 858-525-3086.
Jared Kelly here. Here's the deal. San Diego's expensive. San Diego's a tough place to own and buy a house, but I want to tell you something special about San Diego. The housing market has appreciated consistently over the years, and if you're not a part of that, I want you to ask the question why. I would love to sit down and understand that process with you and help you make a plan so that your family fits your home and you're not strapped by the things that you think are constraining you in San Diego. Visit missionrealtygroup.com, hit the contact tab, and let's have a conversation today.
Hey folks, James Carmody and Jared Kelly, the hosts of Rise Up Radio, your source for good news in the San Diego community. We are sharing the good news about what's going on. We need your help. If you are listening to us, please stop what you're doing. Go to sdriseup.com. In the bottom right corner of the page, there's a button that says, I will rise up. We need your help in sharing the good news in San Diego's community. Whether it's the local pastor of your church, your kid's little league coach, or small business owner, we want to share the good news. So go to sdriseup.com and share the stories.
AM 1170, The Answer.
Welcome back. You're listening to Rise Up Radio. I'm your host, James Carmody. In studio with me is Deborah Dixon, attorney with Deborah Dixon in Chambers, and they're part of the California Fire Lawyers. And we've been unpacking, you know, what's been going on with these fires in Northern California, Southern California, what Dixon, Diab & Chambers has been doing to impact that and make a difference out there in the community and educate people and also begin to help them navigate kind of the legal process if that's the appropriate steps for them. You know, I want to kind of put a bow on this preparedness thing for people. You know, we're still dealing with active wildfires here in Southern California. And you mentioned something, I don't know if it was the four P's or five P's.
Yeah, we've sort of said it's taken from the Red Cross and other preparedness organizations. Mm-hmm. We've sort of come up with these five P's that we tell people. If you have any warning, any advance notice, if you are in one of those areas where they say voluntary evacuations or mandatory evacuations, like we're seeing in the Lilac Fire and some in the Thomas Fire down in Southern California, we ask people to think of these five P's: people and pets. So that's the first one.
People and pets.
The second one is prescriptions. Get all of your prescriptions that you need, that you'll need to survive for the next few days and a week. The third one is what we globally called papers. So nowadays that is maybe a laptop. Bring your chargers also. But that may be not physical papers anymore, but anything that has your account information, documents that are marriage certificates, birth certificates, your immigration status.
Deed to your house.
Deed to your house.
Your note.
Your note. Your social security cards or something that shows your social security card. If you have kids, maybe some of their medical information or, again, their birth certificates. So
and papers. I think that's, and I think the papers, I think that's super important. You know, we obviously, a lot of us have things in the cloud nowadays. Mm-hmm. But like, even at my house, my wife and I, we have a fireproof box. Mm-hmm. And it's small. You know, it's probably 15 inches by 4 by 10, whatever. Mm-hmm. But all the important documents are in there because we know that that in the event something were to happen, everything needed is in that box.
And that's a perfect example. But those fire boxes are meant to be taken with you. They're not meant to actually survive the fire.
I'm sure.
And so people need to remember to grab that box. And having one box with all of your important papers is very important and a crucial step, as you and your wife have done. The fourth one we call is plastic. So that's things like credit cards, insurance cards, which also we always advise people to have cash also, because if you're in a fire, the electricity may be down and nobody can use their cards for things, groceries, gas stations, things like that. So generally a category of plastic or cash. And remembering insurance cards and things like that is an important part of the plastic. And then the five is the personal memorabilia or the pictures. Anything that you would find to be irreplaceable that you can actually take with you. Some people have quilts that are given to generation to generation, you know, antiques, things like that. You can't fill your car full of that stuff because they're going to have the people and the pets and things like that in there. But anything that you just say, this is devastating if I lose this. We hear from Northern California, they didn't have time to escape. They're escaping in minutes with their families, literally driving through flames and burning roads just to get out and to get to some sort of safety. They didn't have time to grab their personal memorabilia and things like that. But every one of them that I speak to says, I had this document from my grandfather or great grandfather that was in World War II. I had this picture of this. Things like that that we hear time and time again that people say, you can't replace that. Objects, things, you know, your kitchen, you can replace those, bedding, things like that. But anything that you would really, really, really want to take with you, if you have the time, we say to grab that. The last thing that I'll say is, if you're in a voluntary evacuation area or have time in a mandatory evacuation area, it's not a bad idea to quickly go through your house and do a recording on your phone of what your house looked like before the fire. Because a lot of times when you're dealing with insurance, or if you don't have insurance and you're making a claim through a lawsuit, for example, you have to try to remember what you had. And sometimes people will say, you know, I had this painting that was given to me from somebody in my family, and take a picture of it because we have evidence that you had that in your house. But also it's a good reminder for you to have a quick video of everything that you had in your house. It will really help you remember what was there.
Makes sense. So folks, we're actually talking about being prepared in the event of a fire, and we're talking about, you know, the five P's to be prepared. And what else should people know as, you know, okay, so now we've gone through the process, unfortunately, and we're looking at, okay, there may be wrongdoing. We're starting to talk about that. What does that look like? What do people need to know?
What we've been doing with our clients is we're hearing their stories and we're trying to help them rebuild in a couple of ways, physical and emotional. And part of that physical is actually rebuilding your home that you lost. And in order to do that, you are going to need the money, the resources. Insurance companies don't cover everything. And that's where a lawsuit will help people be able to rebuild their physical building. If there is, as there is in Northern California, liability for PG&E, and in the Thomas Fire, it does appear that there's liability for Southern California Edison. If there are electrical companies who are at fault, then insurance is never going to cover the entire ability for you to rebuild, and we will go after those that caused the fire. So a lot of people, when they're going to rebuild, they have to first do all the debris removal for their physical house. Then they have to figure out how to rebuild their house. Insurance companies don't cover things like erosion from these mass wildfires. They don't cover things like all the trees and the landscaping they had. There's just not enough money in your policy. Nobody pays for a policy enough to completely rebuild. We would go after the party that was responsible for causing the fire to get that back for our clients. Personal property that they've lost that is not covered by insurance, or they had no insurance. Or things like trees, erosion of the property, and the difference between what your insurance will pay to rebuild and what the actual cost of rebuild is. And then the second part of rebuilding is the emotional rebuilding. A lot of people go through a very, very traumatic situation escaping from the fires. It's equally traumatic to come back and see your entire life in rubbles and nothing left but toxic waste. And it's overwhelming for people, and it's overwhelming for people that have children or elderly family. And the physical part you can start doing, you can start rebuilding, but the emotional one actually does take a toll. We have clients whose kids still have nightmares. If they feel wind, they start acting up, they start getting very scared, they're not sleeping well through the night, because the last time they slept well through the night, they got woken up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning with minutes to go and are driving through burning fire. And so I think it's really important for people to remember that, yes, you physically made it out, but you do need to work on the emotional rebuilding as well. And that is a very big deal for people who are suffering from these wildfires.
I mean, it's just, it's tragic. You know, I can't even imagine. Deborah, would you care to share, you know, an example or two, you know, of these cases that you've actually worked on?
Yes, absolutely. There's so many to choose from, but I have a client up in the Mendocino Fire who at 2 o'clock in the morning started looking outside and saw that the fire was on the ridge and realized he had maybe 2 to 3 minutes to get out his wife, his 3-year-old, his 1-year-old, and his 78-year-old father-in-law who was on oxygen. And all he could do is grab literally his family members, stick them in a car, and drove down the hill that was already on fire and drove through fire with his kids who are inhaling the smoke, and his father-in-law who's on oxygen, that's a bomb in his car essentially. And he was able to escape with their lives, but it wasn't without consequences. His kids had smoke inhalation damage to their lungs. His father-in-law has decreased his health, and their whole life and all of their personal belongings were gone in their home. So that's just one of the many stories that we see up in the Northern California fires. There's elderly families who are in mobile homes who ran out of the home in their nightgown. We have a client who literally, they couldn't escape, and all they can do, barely get out of the house, is to trudge along in their nightgown. There's stories of course, the family who waited in their swimming pool for 6 to 8 hours because they couldn't get out of their house and the fire came. And so they just stayed in their swimming pool, going underwater while the smoke and the flames went past them. These are all really tragic stories that we're seeing up in the Northern California. And I'm sure Thomas fires and Lilac fire victims have similar stories. Those ones, we just had a little bit more warning than we did in Northern California.
Are you starting to see anything from the Thomas and the Lilac fires?
We are. We're actively talking with clients. We have experts on the ground right away who are evaluating what happened, what caused this. And we did as well in the Northern California fires as we do in the Thomas fire and the Lilac fires.
Wow. Well, thank you. You know, thank you for what you're doing. It's just, this has been very educational for me. I know our listeners are getting a lot of information and value out of this conversation. You know, what's the best way for people to contact you? How can they learn more?
One of the best ways is to go to California Fire Lawyers website, which is cafirelawyers.com.
cafirelawyers.com?
Yes. They can reach me if they want to speak directly with me. My cell phone number is 619-929-9818. And they can go to our website as well, but the cafirelawyers.com is the best comprehensive information that will provide you with the stories we're talking about, but also the preparedness and what to do and what to expect.
Yeah. And so folks, you definitely want to save that. Grab your phone, grab a pen, make sure that you save cafirelawyers.com. Hope you never need it, but if you do, it's there. And if you need to share it with, you know, a loved one, you have that resource. Last couple parting words for our listeners.
You know, one of the things that we see in tragedy is the good of fellow citizens and our community. And one of the things that I have seen personally in the Northern California fires, and I'm sure we'll see it in the Southern California and the Thomas fires, is people who are there to help right away, grabbing blankets, giving outreach. We see in Northern California Habitat for Humanity, who is desperately trying to get people housing who don't have housing, and the cold weather is coming in Northern California. And I think that one of the best things that we do see out of these tragedies is our communities coming together. And we appreciate, for example, your show where you highlight some of that. And I take solace in the fact that knowing that there are still people out there who are willing to help and really go over and beyond with lending a hand to people who are victims of these terrible tragedies.
Well, thank you for what you do. Folks, we've been listening to Deborah Dixon from Dixon Diab and Chambers, also with California Fire Lawyers. The bottom line here, folks, is you can never be too prepared. And I know my executive director, Ms. Kriwak, the queen of preparedness, would be remiss if I didn't hammer this point home. It's so important that you have a preparedness plan in the event of a natural disaster, or an incident. You need to have a plan. Where is your family going to meet? Where is your evacuation route? Do you have a fireproof box? Are all your papers in place? Do you know where, you know, your plastic, your pets, all of these things are, so that in a moment's notice, you can leave your home, God forbid that you have to, and get to safety and be prepared and safe in the process. Folks, this is just such an important topic. So I want to thank you, Deborah. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. It's been wonderful to be here. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And folks, just to circle back, you know, from the first half of the show, we had retired U.S. Navy SEAL Floyd McClendon Jr. on the show, who's going to be a politician. This guy's going to make a run for it, and we want to get us back in unifying America. So check out Floyd McClendon Jr. on LinkedIn and online. You have been listening to Rise Up Radio. I am your host, James Carmody. Check us out at sdriseup.com. And remember, as always, rise up.